the spiritual exercises are not something you do. You don't make the exercises. The exercises give you a way to continue not only a relationship with God and God's relationship with you, but your relationship with you. No one who really knows the exercises would ever say they made the exercise. We're always making them, just like any relationship. We are constantly in the relationship. We did that relationship. No. If it's a relationship, it continues. So it's a pathway to keep walking. It's to help us be pilgrims. And so you can plug into any part of the exercises, depending on how you answer the question. And the question is always, how are you? How are you will tell you where you are being met. And wherever you are, that's where you are. And the finding God, the searching God, the ever-present God, is there. The nature of love is the person who loves the truth of the other and loves where the other really is. That is, if you love someone, you know they have a bad knee. How's your knee? Let's talk about your knee. It's okay to be where I am. God is already present to where I am. I just have to catch up. So to know where I am is to know where God is. God is not up there or over there. God is not only in church or only in the desert. God is laboring. And what I have to do is grow in attentiveness and awareness, to be alert, not scrupulously or obsessively, but to grow in that attentiveness that I am beloved by God. I don't have to win it, earn it, regain it. It's there. So that how does one pray in this process of living and making the exercises? As I have said several times, how you live highly influences your spiritual life. If you make sure that you never have to trust, if you make sure that there is no insecurity in your life, if you live constantly addicted to noise or information, those things hurt your spiritual life. The spiritual life isn't something you do and then you say, okay, I did the God thing for half hour. I did the God thing, now it's my time. You just will not be attentive during your time. If it's your time, you will be attentive to your time. And pretty soon you will drift away from even wanting to pray. Praying isn't productive as much as my time is productive. In one sense, prayer, you'll know how long you should pray. It's helpful for me. Praying is not saying words only. I might. Whatever prayer, sometimes I at the end of prayer I say, whatever you think prayer is, God, that's just what I did. Because it's a faith experience. I don't have a program, except as Ignatius would start, how am I? What's my truth? And where am I? How is God finding me? I have not been in contact with God, but now I am. So there is that, but I seem to know when prayer is I'm done is when I have a sense of mission, or there's something good in me that I has been blessed and it's time to give it away. Some sense that it is time to go. An image of that might be, if you remember the Transfiguration, when they're up on mounted, the three of them with Jesus, and they have this spiritual experience of the transcendence of God. And it's a consolation to them. It gives them deep meaning. They have an intimate experience of the interior of Jesus. And they say, good, let's build three tents and stay here. Let's change the locks and throw away the keys. Let's just have it for ourselves. And Jesus said, no. In Luke's gospel, they go down on the level. I love that. Let's go deal with life on the level. As I said early in the retreat, be careful about spirituality as an egocentric thing. Maybe religiously self-righteous. I can quantify. I go to adoration. I say the rosary. I have the nine First Fridays. I do novenas. But what do you let God do for you? So the question is, prayer will send me to life. Not that I've told God everything and got everything figured out, but I've been quiet enough to receive myself again. It's not egocentric, no, because whatever I receive is not mine. And so we go. Prayer will send you to life. Fortunately or unfortunately, life will say you haven't prayed enough. It'll send you back to prayer. And that's the revolving prayer door, where I see that I am not receptive to life. I do not receive all the slices of daily bread. I don't receive everything gratefully. And I'm not mad at it. I come back because I am so human. I am so self-centered. I have inclinations towards indulgence and regret and revenge and all. I'm human, therefore nothing human is alien to me. I am available to everything that is human. And so was Jesus. And he lived with it and asks me to live with it as a human being. Prayer is not something that you can define. Maybe it's this way. Intimacy cannot be standardized. Real quality relationships cannot be measured. They're just experienced. And real relationships free both persons in the relationship to be beyond that relationship. So our relationship with God automatically will move us beyond just me and Jesus. There, Jesus makes me a we. That's really what it is. And the danger in the spiritual life is like the danger in all of life, that it's all about me. I want to know how well I'm doing. Forget it. You're never going to know how well you're doing. There's no numbers. There's no colors or adjectives that'll tell you how you're doing. And maybe that's the most mysterious thing about relationship with God. You're never going to know how you're doing. You're not going to know what house you're in or rung of the ladder or how far you are up the mountain. That's so human and so unhealthy. It's to live that way. You know, you wouldn't go on a walk with a friend and at the end of it say, what grade would you give us for that talk? That'd be the last walk you had with that person. It's not to be gauged, it's to be engaged. It's to be experienced and assuming it's an intimate relationship, both are better for the encounter, but not better just for each other, but for beyond each other. The North American problem with prayer is that it doesn't seem immediately productive. And those are two big words. We like immediacy and we like productivity. Another thing that we like is selectivity. And this is what I'm saying about how you live. Menu used to be something in a restaurant. Now it's everywhere in our lives. It's the TV switcher business, the remote, the computer, the cell phones, the iPhones. Everything has options, and you can switch so quickly and get immediate information, the immediacy and productivity and choice. And we, do you see, if that's the atmosphere, if that's the psychology and it really influences us, then prayer, it doesn't have a chance. Our spiritual life doesn't have a chance because we demand options, productivity, and immediacy. And it's so available to us. And it can be delivered to us. We don't have to go and get it. It comes in on a drone or it comes in a package the next day. We are so influenced by immediacy and options. And if we are going to be spiritual people and peaceful people, we have to almost discipline ourselves and watch, just watch in your day how your ego is so demanding about the necessity of your choice being immediately produced and that you quickly produce something. And the time is not valued. It's squeezed. So prayer doesn't have a chance if that's the way of living. And it takes silence and calm to have a spiritual life. But that's difficult to get. One of the offerings of the exercises then is a thing we call the examine of consciousness. And there are articles about that. Father George Ashenbrenner wrote the famous book, and Father Dennis Ham wrote a book called Rummaging for God, a little essay, I shouldn't say a book, a little essay that's very popular, about spending some time at the end of the day not looking for productivity, but looking for the presence of God and the rising of your spirit and the comfort, and to stay in touch with your spirit and something of the beyond. We are, our noses are on the grindstone and close to the ground and all these terms. We keep our ear to the ground and our shoulder to the wheel and our eye on the prize. But it doesn't say much about keeping your spirit available to grace. And we don't trust it because it's not productive and it's not tangible. But if you could for a while get accustomed to it, you would be hard to live without it. To sometimes I've said, eventually you're going to take off your shoes. And then to pray with your shoes, where did they take you today? And how were you where they took you? And when you were in your shoes, what did you receive and what did you refuse to receive? And no regrets or anything, it's just, I review the day, I look at the day, and that's what it was. I'll never have another day like that. It's a day of time and leading towards eternity. So to spend some time with it, I know people who make the examine better in the morning about the day past. I think you need a little distance from it. Where was I? Where wasn't I? Maybe that's a good way of examine. What was given and what was taken? What was refused? Any questions? But it's not an examine of conscience, but consciousness. Conscience is, what did I do wrong? It's not about what did I do wrong. It's what was given and what was received. And to get accustomed to the activity of the laboring God. Well, that's one way to continue being in a position to let the exercises make you rather than you're making the exercises. It is always about receptivity, moving towards generosity. It's all about intimacy moving to mission. It's the examine, in some ways, is the antidote to the encouragement of our culture that it's all about me. And that's so natural to us. It's our natural default. It's how we fall. It's the gravitational pull. That's where we go. We go to protecting and celebrating ourselves. And that's not, there's no happiness there. There's no peacefulness in constantly serving and being obsessed with the importance of myself, with my grabbing myself rather than receiving it. The spiritual life is a great way to live, but it's countercultural. And people making the exercises, people say, "You're crazy. You missed. You were praying, but boy, did you miss what was on TV, or did you miss that ball game, or did you miss that parade or that party?" Or you say, "I may have missed it, but I'll be more available to not missing other chapters, other parties, other somethings." So the spiritual life does move us to being attentive, but we have to be attentive to be in a spiritual life, so it's a circle. There are many forms of prayer, and in the exercises, that's one prayer, one way, and the emphasis on contemplation and examine. But there's prayer of quiet, there's vocal prayer, there's songs. Whatever encourages you, gives you a heart, an enthusiasm, a theos. Enthusiasm means the Greek word for God, theos. Enthusiasm is there's a God inside me. To let that be. That will, it's not just to receive peace during my prayer, it's that I will be a more peaceful person around. I will be less concerned about my protection of turf. Prayer is a way of living, actually. And people might say to you, how was your prayer, or how was your retreat? And what is the proper response is, when somebody says, you say to them, "You tell me in 6 months how my retreat was. I'm not going to know. You'll know if there's any change. That's egocentric to pray so that I change, that I get better. God's grace will do the increase. I won't know it." In one way, prayer is not what I do, it's something I receive. That God, the laboring God, prays over me and around me and within me. And I don't know what God is doing. I give that up. I say, "Well, I didn't get any warm, fuzzy feelings, or I didn't get any good ideas." Good for you. It doesn't mean you didn't pray. It's this simple, and we saw it in Mary these days. Pregnancy, the result of, say, sexual intimacy, has many results. It might be physical pregnancy. There will be a fruitfulness, God willing, but there's a fruitfulness that extends beyond the bedroom. There's a fruitfulness because of that intimate relationship, the fruitfulness of which is not just shared with each other, but beyond. That the object of intimacy is fruitfulness, the object of prayer is fruitfulness, but I might not know it. Most likely I don't. And I'm glad I don't, because then my ego would say, "Boy, you really prayed well, I don't want to hear that. I don't want to get suckered in." That prayer is something that extends me into life. It's not just a half hour here, a half hour there. It goes with me. It takes me into life. That's where the fruitfulness is. And I might, as I say, I might not know it. I might not know I've changed. The changes that are brought about by encounter, by friendship, by love, we don't know them. Others know them. My wanting to know them is egocentric. I want to know how good I'm getting by how well I'm doing. Yeah. Then you're not praying. You're at a charm school. You're at a camp for weak egos. Well, how to end retreat? See, we're ending the time together, but beginning. I mean, it's like the Eucharist. When does Mass begin and when does it end? It doesn't. How I live the Eucharist continues the Eucharist. It's part of the Eucharist. When does prayer end? It doesn't. It goes with me, and I take prayer along with me, and it takes me into living a life, a fruitful life that I'm not gauging. I don't count it. I don't. My examine of consciousness is not about evaluation. It's about celebration of the activity of God. As good as you are to yourself during prayer, that is how good the world needs you to be for them. Be a creative presence, a Christ presence, and you won't even know how you're doing it if you can forget that. Now Jesus says, you know, nobody puts a lamp under a bushel basket. Right, you are meant to be seen. But Christ is meant to be seen in us. And while the ego says, no, you should be seen too. You should be celebrated. No, that's empty. That's boring. It's that Christ is to be seen in me and seen in you. That's how this world is going to change. That's how my little world is going to change. So you are not done making the exercises. God is not done laboring to bring you more and more to life.